Welcome to the Sunshine Economy today here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Jessica Bakeman.
Public school teachers have forced more money to be spent on students and their own salaries in a handful of states this year, most of them red states in the West. The wave of teacher walkouts is not likely to reach Florida, though. Despite that, many teachers here have similar complaints. They argue that state lawmakers have starved and undermined public schools, underpay teachers, and are threatening the existence of teachers' unions. We'll talk more about this later on in the program. Florida teachers don't see striking as a viable option for addressing their grievances, but it wasn't always that way.
In February of 1968, Raymond Dunn walked out of his classroom at Colonial Drive Elementary School in Perrine. It was the second time he'd risked his career. When he was in college at Florida A&M University in the 60s, he marched to protest the segregated movie theaters in Tallahassee and got arrested.
We were told that because you have an arrest record, you will never get a teacher's license in the state of Florida.
It turned out to be an empty threat, and he faced it again a few years later when he participated in a different kind of protest. In 1968, 50 years ago, Florida was home to the first statewide teacher strike in U.S. history. 40% of the state's teachers left their classrooms, some for longer than 3 weeks. They had the same complaints a lot of teachers have now, here and across the country. Too little pay, poor working conditions, too many kids in a classroom, schools in disrepair.
What we needed at that time was action.
Dunn taught 5th and 6th grade in Miami-Dade County, the epicenter of the walkout. Going on strike was illegal, so the teachers resigned, and they knew they might not get their jobs back.
Fortunately, there were enough of us who were willing to cross that line and step out there and say, enough is enough, fund the schools.
Tension between state lawmakers and teachers had been heating up for years. Florida's population was exploding, and schools were struggling to handle the influx of new students. Then there was a stunning upset in the governor's race, pulled off by Claude Kirk.
He was kind of like Donald Trump without the Twitter.
Bob Sanchez is a senior fellow with the James Madison Institute, a think tank in Tallahassee, and a former longtime editorial writer for the Miami Herald.
He became the first Republican governor since Reconstruction period and ran as a pro-business conservative.
Florida must be number one in education.
This was Claude Kirk's inaugural address in 1967. He promised two things, better schools and no new taxes.
It must have its long-range objective, the creation of the best educational program in the United States. And it is obvious that money alone is not the answer.
During the legislative session that followed, lawmakers appropriated $150 million more for schools, but Kirk vetoed it. That summer, the Florida Education Association, a statewide union, organized a massive meeting at the Tangerine Bowl in Orlando. 30,000 people, half the teachers in the state, showed up. The leaders asked them to resign.
Close your eyes. Close your eyes right now.
The statewide union circulated this video in hopes of persuading teachers who were hesitant. It's set to The Impossible Dream, a song from a musical that was new at the time, Man of La Mancha.
If you will stand with your profession, come what may, stand up. Stand up now. Get out of that chair and on your feet. Stand tall. You're a school teacher.
The video was supposed to be secret, but Governor Claude Kirk got a pirated copy and leaked it to reporters. In January of 1968, the governor called a special session to try to appease the teachers. Lawmakers passed a new education funding bill, this time worth more than $300 million. They paid for it with new sales taxes.
We had a decision to make, to wait till he vetoed it or not to.
Pat Tornillo was president of the Dade County Classroom Teachers Association and one of the main leaders of the strike. This interview is from a 1992 documentary produced by WFSU-TV, the Florida Channel.
And right or wrong, we came down on the side of not waiting because we felt we needed to do something to show him that we were dead serious. And that's why we walked.
On February 19th, 1968, more than 25,000 teachers didn't go to school, and 22 of Florida's 67 school districts closed. Some districts and schools stayed open with substitutes, Union members called them scabs. At the time, A.J. Bookie Henriquez was assistant superintendent of the Monroe County District, the Florida Keys. He's now 84.
We were bringing in anyone that had any blood flowing, warm bodies.
The school board in the Keys wanted to fire all the teachers and asked the state to revoke their certifications.
That would have been catastrophic in our school district because we had about a 30-40% walkout. There was no way humanly possible we were going to find a way to replace that many quality school teachers. They just were not available.
Henriquez told the school board not to do it, going against his boss. Feeling bad about his disloyalty, he offered the superintendent his resignation.
His answer to me was, just cool it, take it easy, just let some time go by, and let's see what happens.
The superintendent retired later that year, and Henriquez ran for the position. It was elected back then. He won and served for 24 years. As the 1968 strike began, two-thirds of Miami-Dade teachers walked out.
We went down to this stadium here in Miami.
I remember it being loud and a lot of cheering and yelling, and I'd say like a football game, except I don't like football games, and I like this.
It was almost like a scene from a Wagnerian opera.
It was Marilyn Neff's first year in the classroom. She taught first grade at Highland Oaks Elementary School in North Dade County. She remembers gathering with other striking teachers every day at Marine Stadium on Virginia Key.
It's hard to recognize Miami Marine Stadium now, but at that time there was a big rostrum out in the water where people would perform, and then the stadium itself was many tiers high. And there were water taxis that would bring people to the rostrum.
It was a stadium full of black people and white people together.
Raymond Dunn went to Marine Stadium the first night of the strike. He didn't know whether to feel hopeful or resentful about the crowd, which was racially mixed in a way he hadn't seen before.
I sat there overlooking to the south, Virginia Key Beach, thinking, wait a minute, that's been the black beach all of these years, and right across the causeway was the white beach, and now here we are together, a whole stadium full of black people and white people trying to support a common cause when all of these years we were separated in the same property.
Dunn is now 74. He taught for a while and has since worked as a professor and administrator at Miami-Dade College, Broward College, and Nova Southeastern University.
I've thought about that over the years. What a powerful picture it was to see all of those teachers, black and white, together. When I know the history and the terrible, terrible things that happened right down the street from there, when white people thought that the black people got in the ocean with them, that somehow the color would come off or whatever the hell they thought. I don't even know. I was rather conflicted.
When the teachers walked out of their schools, Governor Claude Kirk was out of state. He was in California negotiating the opening of Disney World. Newspaper front pages ran photos of teachers protesting here, next to one of Kirk shaking hands with Goofy. A few days into the strike, on February 21st, Kirk flew in from California to Miami, determined to address the teachers.
He did arrive at Miami Marine Stadium in dramatic fashion, by helicopter.
This is Bob Sanchez again, the researcher and former Herald editorial writer.
He asked an aide to find out what was the longest Cuban dictator Fidel Castro had spoken.
A Cuban reporter there said it was a few hours.
And the governor vowed to speak on and on and on, and did until he had eclipsed Castro's reputed record, after which he said, I beat that commie SOB.
This is from Kirk's speech that night. The sound was included in the Florida Channel documentary.
The showing has been made for whatever value it is. If you lose 1,000 more who go back to school, or if you get 1,000 more to stay out, what good is it really?
He talked to us so nasty.
Adora Obi Nweze was 25 and had been teaching in Miami for about a year and a half.
He said the real teachers are in the classroom. You don't care about children. He made us feel so badly, and, you know, I could feel the tears.
A lot of people had signs.
This is Marilyn Neff again.
I don't know if you can say this on the radio, but one of them was Florida under Claude Kirk. And the capital letters were very large. And that was a not so subtle indication of our sentiment at the time.
Neff said she and her colleagues at Highland Oaks Elementary decided to walk out as a faculty. She volunteered to drive to the stadium every day.
Sadly, as the weeks went by, my station wagon was not as full as it was when it started.
Neff is 81 now. She was a teacher and an administrator in Miami-Dade County for 30 years and ended her career as Associate Dean of Education at the University of Miami. Marine Stadium closed in 1992 and is now covered in graffiti. A national push for its restoration has been on hold for years. State leaders knew Miami was the key to ending the strike.
If we resolve in Dade County, it would take care of the state.
Holmes Braddock is 92 and lives in West Kendall, near a school that's named after him. He was on the Dade County School Board in 1968. He was sympathetic to the teachers. His mom had taught for 41 years before retiring. So his colleagues asked him to negotiate a resolution with the local union president, Pat Tornillo.
The union had a headquarters in the DuPont Plaza Hotel,
which doesn't exist anymore.
I met with them at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, so we could walk in and out without being seen, so to speak.
The superintendent and school board members planned a trip to Tallahassee to try to convince the cabinet, which also served as the State Board of Education, to make some concessions. Some kids had been out of school for a couple weeks, and their parents weren't happy. There was intense public pressure on school district leaders to accept teachers' resignations, just fire them all. But the district wouldn't be able to replace more than 5,000 teachers. So they made a plan to buy time. Tornillo would bring the resignations to the deputy superintendent, who they left in charge.
So that day when we went to Tallahassee, Tornillo backs up a truck because there are boxes and boxes, 5,200 resignations there.
But the deputy said he didn't have the authority to accept them. It worked. With prodding from the Dade district leaders, the cabinet acted, telling school boards they were allowed to recognize teachers' unions as the exclusive collective bargaining units for their members. Governor Claude Kirk didn't veto that new education spending bill. He let it become law without his signature. And the strike came to a close. Tornillo led the Miami-Dade Union for 4 decades, and teachers widely credited him for the accomplishments of the walkout. But later, they felt betrayed. He went to prison in 2003 for embezzling union funds, and he died a few years later.
I wonder if we stayed out longer, would that have made more of a difference?
Adora Obi and Weze earned $6 the month of the walkout. After, she went back to Lily C. Evans Elementary near Liberty City. It was the same school she'd attended as a little girl, and her principal as a child had become her boss.
I learned a lot about myself during that strike. The fact that I'm a fighter. The fact that, yes, I will stay.
And Weze later became a principal and a district administrator, and now she leads the Florida NAACP. The legislature held another special session in the summer of 1968 to change the Constitution. They wrote new language guaranteeing workers a right to collective bargaining. And they added the following sentence. Public employees shall not have the right to strike.
Still to come, after the 1968 strike, the past 2 decades of big changes for public schools and teachers' unions.
The teachers' union is fixated on halting innovation and competition in education.
Welcome back to The Sunshine Economy, the state of teachers' unions. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Jessica Bakeman. Florida teachers have not gone out on strike since 1968. It's still illegal. But now they could be fired or put their teachers' licenses and pensions at risk.
Now a new law threatens the existence of teacher unions. If at least 50% of teachers don't belong, the union could lose its state certification. So how did Florida teachers' unions go from staging the first statewide teacher strike in the country to now facing potential extinction?
With the strike, teachers notched a major win for public employees in Florida, but it wasn't ironclad until several years later. By 1974, public employees' right to collective bargaining was enshrined in state law and the Constitution. Democrats then enjoyed a long period of one-party control over the legislature and the governor's office, except for the single term of Bob Martinez in the late 1980s. But public school teachers have been playing defense, not always successfully, since Republicans won control of the House and Senate in the mid-90s, and Jeb Bush was elected governor in 1998. Bush instituted radical reforms that became the foundation for Florida's diversified education landscape today. Some would call it innovative, rich, robust. Others, fractured, unequal, even corrupt.
Under Bush, Florida opened its first charter schools, funded with public dollars but operated by private companies. And he founded the state's first voucher programs, allowing students to go to private schools using taxpayer dollars.
No student in our state should be forced to attend a school that repeatedly continues to fail.
This is Jeb Bush's first State of the State address in March 1999.
We owe children in failing schools real education opportunities, not our apologies. That's why I urge you to support giving opportunity scholarships to children in chronically failing schools.
Teachers' unions have been at the center of the most controversial fights over education policy in Florida ever since, including an effort to limit class sizes in 2002. The question was on the same ballot that year when Bush was up for re-election.
Governor, as you well know, Florida ranks 44th in class size in elementary schools, 49th in high school. With that information, why do you oppose Amendment 9 to mandate smaller class size?
First of all, I support lower class sizes. And I have a plan to build 12,000 new schools over the next 5 years.
Teachers' unions took a lead role in championing the class size amendment. Bush was against it.
The problem with this amendment is that it'll diminish teacher quality. We don't have enough qualified teachers to be able to fill all of those spots. The second problem is it takes away, it's the largest mandate in the state's history. It takes away all of the innovation that could happen at the school-based level. And thirdly, it will require a massive increase in taxes.
Voters approved the amendment and re-elected Bush that November. It set unprecedented limits on how many students could be assigned to each teacher, no more than 18 through third grade, and up to a maximum of 25 in high school. Lawmakers have been trying to dilute or repeal it ever since, which teachers' unions have fought at every opportunity.
But the biggest fight between Bush and teachers' unions came a few years later.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye! The Supreme Court of Florida is now in session.
The statewide Florida Education Association and others challenged Bush's opportunity scholarships, vouchers, arguing they were unconstitutional because they allowed public dollars to go to religious schools. The case was Bush v. Holmes. These are from the Florida Supreme Court oral arguments in 2005.
It's not a clandestine way to fund religious or sectarian schools. This program is in aid of Florida's children. This program is constitutional.
The free public school system is, as this court has put it, the cornerstone of our civilization upon which the very future of our form of government may well depend.
The teachers' union won, and Bush's original voucher plan was thrown out.
In the realm of politics, you can't achieve everything you want. But we've achieved more in Florida in terms of school choice than any state by far.
This was the year he left office. Bush had not given up on the idea of vouchers. He was talking with Peter Robinson with the Hoover Institution, a public policy think tank.
The politics of the situation aside, would you go for some sort of universal voucher program if you could? You would.
Sure.
Jeb Bush's successor was Charlie Crist, a Republican when he was first elected governor, later an independent, and still later in his political career, a Democrat.
In his last year as governor, the legislature passed a bill that would have eliminated tenure for teachers and instituted a new system for compensating them based on merit. For the first time since 1968, teachers in South Florida took drastic action. On April 12, 2010, more than 6,000 teachers in Miami-Dade mounted a so-called sick out. They all called in sick on the same day. Some of them went to Tropical Park, waved signs demanding that Crist veto the bill. He did. But teachers' relief didn't last long.
Governor Rick Scott launched a direct challenge to teachers and teachers' unions today, saying he plans to eliminate tenure.
Educators, like other professionals, should be rewarded based on the effectiveness of their work, not the length of their professional life.
Conservative Governor Rick Scott's first State of the State in 2011.
That's why Florida needs to pay the best educators more and end the practice of guaranteeing educators a job for life, regardless of their performance.
Getting rid of tenure and instituting merit pay was the first bill Scott signed into law as governor.
The Florida Education Association helped defeat Jeb Bush's first voucher program back in 2006. But Republicans got around the precedent set by Bush v. Holmes by coming up with a way the state could indirectly fund vouchers with what's called tax credit scholarships. Corporations get a 100% tax credit for donations they make to so-called scholarship funding organizations. The state forfeits that revenue. The FEA sued again, and this is the union's lawyer, Ron Mayer, in 2014.
This has become an industry. It's a moneymaker for scholarship funding organizations.
A decade after Bush v. Holmes, nearly 100,000 students were attending private schools in Florida under similar programs, costing hundreds of millions of dollars. More than 2,000 teachers rallied outside the state capitol at the start of the 2016 legislative session.
In the Florida Constitution, it says it is a paramount duty of the Florida legislature to provide a free, high-quality, uniform public education system.
This is Florida Education Association President Joanne McCall in 2016 making a familiar argument against school vouchers.
Not a parallel system, not a for-profit system, but a uniform public school system.
Hello, I'm Martin Luther King III. Please join me in Tallahassee on January 19th for the rally to save the scholarship program.
A few days after the teacher protest, supporters of school vouchers had their own rally. More than 10,000 people were there, most of them students.
And our message is simple. Drop the suit.
The rally cost $1 million. It was funded by the American Federation for Children, at the time chaired by Betsy DeVos. She's now the U.S. Secretary of Education.
If teachers thought Rick Scott was their enemy, they were in for an arguably tougher opponent, House Speaker Richard Corcoran.
The teachers' union is fixated on halting innovation and competition in education.
This is Corcoran during his first address after being designated speaker in November 2016.
They are literally trying to destroy the lives of 100,000 children. Most of them are minorities, and all of them are poor. It is downright evil.
In the session that followed, Corcoran championed House Bill 7069. It gave unprecedented freedom and resources to charter schools. The bill also outlawed a kind of quasi-tenure administrators and teachers' unions had worked out, annual contract renewals for teachers rated effective or highly effective on performance evaluations.
Then came House Bill 7055. That passed during this year's session. It says if 50% of eligible members are not paying dues to a teachers' union, the union could lose the right to represent its members in collective bargaining negotiations.
I think the time for unions may have passed.
Representative Larry Ahern is a Republican from Central Florida. He argued on the House floor for a similar bill that was the basis of what ultimately became law.
It seems to me that they're no longer really serving the people that they claim to represent. They're merely serving themselves.
Opponents argued the bill failed to acknowledge that Florida is a right-to-work state. That means people are not required to pay dues to unions, and they are represented by a union and a union contract whether they pay or not. Teacher salaries in Florida are some of the lowest in the nation. Democrats and at least one Republican in the Florida Senate railed against the proposal.
It's not right that we say teachers are the only ones we're going
to
punish.
It's punitive to the working class. This is just punitive. It's just mean-spirited what we're doing. And I didn't come up here to be a hater.
What do we want?
Raises!
When do we want it?
Now!
Earlier this month, dozens of Miami-Dade teachers protested outside the last school board meeting of the academic year. One of their signs listed the states where teachers have demonstrated in recent months, each with a check mark after it. West Virginia, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Colorado, Arizona. Next to Florida, there was a question mark.
We are lucky enough to live in a moment. We're living a historical moment that if we don't take advantage of and exploit that moment, then we'll all the worse for doing it.
Even if Florida's teachers can't walk out like they did 50 years ago, Alex Hernandez says they can agitate, organize, and shame. He teaches U.S. history at Holmes Braddock Senior High School. He's been in the classroom for 18 years. If Florida teachers did strike today, they could lose their jobs, their teaching licenses, their pensions.
Just because that particular door is closed doesn't mean all doors are closed to affect change. It's just, we just have a narrower road to travel.
Number one school district 7 years in a row. Who did this?
Teachers did this!
Who did this?
Teachers did this!
Who did this?
Still to come, we talk with three teacher union presidents in South Florida.
The national unrest has certainly created more unrest here locally.
We know in Florida that we
traded years ago to have collective bargaining in our Constitution in lieu of being able to strike?
If we had an opportunity, we all would be on board with it, and you would see the whole state of Florida, every single teacher, and I guarantee parents backing us on it and doing it.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Jessica Bakeman. Today we are talking about the state of teachers' unions. The average teacher salary in the United States dropped by 1.6% in the last 18 years when adjusted for inflation. In Florida, that average salary is down more than 6%, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. We spoke with the union presidents representing teachers in three South Florida counties.
I'm Carla Hernandez-Matz, president of the United Teachers of Dade, a middle school special education science teacher and mother of two.
Anna Fusco, president of the Broward Teachers Union and a fifth grade teacher.
Holly Hummel-Gorman, president of United Teachers of Monroe, and I taught Spanish and English to speakers of other languages.
After the teacher strikes in other states, we started by asking the three, 50 years after the 1968 walkout, could it happen again in Florida?
The national unrest has certainly created more unrest here locally. And, you know, we are frustrated as well because it's been decades of Republican control and decades of underfunding for public schools. And so we see a systematic, dismantling of public education. And I think that teachers are at that brink. Will we get there? We hope that we won't.
Holly, are you hearing about strikes in Monroe County?
They're not really talking about striking down here. We are frustrated. We know in Florida that we traded years ago to have collective bargaining in our Constitution in lieu of being able to strike.
Anna, do you think that a strike would accomplish anything?
Broward Teachers Union got a 5% raise last school year, and teachers got up to a 3.5% raise this year. So our strong organizing and increased demands from all of our teachers in our bargaining unit really, stay together and push back hard on the district to, look deep and find the funds to give the much needed money that was due. Now, do strikes make a difference? Well, look at the statistics across the country. Every single state or city or wherever they decided to strike, did it show a difference? Did they wind up getting what they wanted? So your answer is right there. Yes, it makes a difference. Is it something here in Florida that we're encouraging right now? Absolutely not, because we want to make sure that everybody's pensions and their careers are secure and their certificates. But I could tell you right now, if we had an opportunity, we all would be on board with it, and you would see the whole state of Florida, every single teacher, and I guarantee parents backing us on it and doing it.
Florida is a right-to-work state. So it's not mandatory for workers to join unions or pay dues, although they may still be included in those collective bargaining contracts. So does that make it tough to convince teachers that it's worth it to pay dues? Holly?
Luckily down here, the teachers see the value of our union. We have a really strong teacher membership. We have the highest cost of living in the state as well. Because our housing is so expensive down here.
Well, I wonder if that would make it harder to convince teachers to be a part of the union, because there might be some who say, I just can't afford, those however many dollars out of my paycheck every couple weeks.
Honestly, my answer to that is you can't afford not to.
I would say that, for here, for Miami-Dade, considering that the cost of living is, the highest in the state, and over the past 20 years, legislators haven't really given teachers raises that are up to par with inflation and the cost of living in South Florida. The fact is, if that we were to take those things into consideration, the cost of living, inflation, and compare our salaries now to 20 years ago, we would be making less. And so, as a right to work state under those conditions, asking teachers to make a choice between supporting their families and securing their rights is really a tough choice.
Could that be a failure of negotiation? I mean, what's causing that?
So it's certainly not a failure. I mean, for example, last year, our state gave us less than 1%. And despite the fact that we had less than 1% in new money, United Teachers of Dade here in Miami-Dade was able to get 2.67 for the majority of the workforce. And we've been able to get raises for the past 7 years, you know, consecutively, despite the shortcomings of our state legislature.
And just to give an idea of the numbers that you're talking about, I looked at the numbers. It looks like for a starting new teacher in your districts, it's around $40,000 for salary. The mean number of what teachers are making in Dade and Broward is closer to 50, which is significantly below the national mean.
Absolutely. Statewide, we're one of the lowest paid states in the nation. We always fall in the bottom 10. And we're about 10,000 below the national average.
Well, I want to go to Anna now because she physically raised her hand a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm in class. at least for Broward teachers, the part is solely on the state, because there is a trend. And if you do the research, you'll see that there's nothing been but cutbacks, cutbacks, cutbacks on the public education part. And as we know, we should keep every part of what's needed in our schools in the budget. If there's cutbacks, 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 you know, the people working out the budget in our districts, they want to make sure that the resources and what is needed with fidelity are there for the students, because it's about the students. We're not saying that, but it's also about people that this is their jobs, their careers, their livelihood, that need to be always considered on salaries. And when there's cutbacks from the state, what do you think the district is going to look at last? They're going to look at salaries, and which has been the trend, even though as Dade has been steadily, you know, getting raises the past, you know, the 6-7 years, even though the steps were stripped from us, they've been really minimal. And the only time that we saw a significant increase, which our district went out wholeheartedly, was the past 2 school years, the 5%. And, you know, our teachers last year, this school year, was 2.6, between 3.5%, depending on the years put in service.
Can you guys give me an idea of what your dues are, what's coming out of the paychecks for your teachers?
It depends on what your job classification is. So our teachers are the ones that have the highest dues. They pay $40 a pay period.
And are those every other week, the pay periods?
Every other week for 10 months, because we don't work summers. And our educational support professionals, they pay $20 a pay period. And if they are part-time, they pay $10 a pay period.
Okay, so it's $40 a paycheck in Miami-Dade. How about in Broward, Anna?
Yep, Broward, it's the same. And it's also paid out by our part-time teachers and our other job descriptions of what's based on their salary, of how much they pay into the dues. And as again, it is a total choice. We have grown in the past few years. We're over 12,000 members, so we are very solid.
To bring Holly in, Holly, what are teachers paying for dues in the Keys, and can you tell us what percentage of your teachers are paying dues?
In Monroe County, the teachers pay $35 per pay period, and those are for 20 pay periods as well. We don't have any deductions during the summer. We also represent the education support professionals, and those are our maintenance workers, our transportation and food service, and they pay half of that, so about $17 per pay period. We are right about 90% membership with our teachers. We are not that high in our education support professionals unit, but we are gaining members every day. We're hovering right around 50%.
Okay, well, 90% sounds pretty high. I would guess that's higher than a lot of the bigger unions throughout the state. Where do you guys stand with teachers specifically? What percentage of your teachers are dues-paying members of the unions?
So in United Teachers of Dade, we have over 50% teachers in the union. The tricky part with this law, that was passed is that it is based on your certification. And so we have one certificate. United Teachers of Dade is PERC certification number one, and we represent everybody under one certificate. So that accounts obviously for our teachers, our paraprofessionals, our clerical workers, our security monitors.
I see. So if you include those other categories of workers, you're not at 50%?
Correct. We're at 49%. And so we are over 15,000 members. We are the largest teachers union in the state. We're over 15,000 members. And just this year alone, we have, obtained over 2,500 new members.
So as we mentioned before, the percentage of teachers or workers who are members of the union is a key question right now, since the legislature recently passed a new law that could lead to some unions being decertified. That means if a teachers union doesn't represent at least half of the eligible members, it will have to reapply for the rights to represent teachers in negotiations with school district administrators. So where do you stand in Broward County, Anna, with that percentage?
Percentage is over 65%.
That's with teachers and others as
well?
Oh,
we have our the little bit difference between Broward Teachers Union that we have four groups. So all of our units are well over the percentage.
So this new law was a part of, it was a provision in a law that's known as House Bill 7055. And there was actually a similar bill that was different, that didn't go through, that would have affected most public sector unions, although law enforcement was the big exception. So when this went forward, it passed only affecting teachers' unions. The sponsors of the bill say that's because it was included in an education bill, and we have a law that says that bills should be single subject, although there's some debate about whether that's the case in this bill and some other controversial big bills.
Right.
But I wanted to ask you, Carla, specifically, obviously you guys are mentioning this law specifically targets teachers, but do you feel that it's targeting Dade in particular, given that you're the biggest union?
Absolutely. I think that it is a target to Miami-Dade County Public Schools. They see this as an attack on only teachers' unions, and we find that to be discriminatory.
Well, you said the word discriminatory, and just to add another component to this, I've heard arguments as well that this, obviously the education field and the teaching field in particular is majority female.
Yes.
And so I've heard some arguments about that as well, that it's, discriminatory against women. But along those lines or just the lines that, it specifically targets teachers, are you guys talking about or considering a lawsuit or litigating over that claim? And anyone's welcome to jump in here.
So I know that the Florida Education Association is certainly, planning something. Obviously, the law goes into effect on July 1st, but there are a couple of factors that obviously don't seem to be legal. There is this discriminatory aspect that we just talked about, but also just the plain and simple fact that our Constitution says we have the right to collective bargain.
Yeah, absolutely. Broward Teachers Union is joining in with that lawsuit, along with the Florida Education Association. It is definitely targeted a particular profession and a particular group, which is
gender.
over 97% are female. That says a lot.
That was Anna Fusco, Carla Hernandez-Matz, and Holly Hummel-Gorman, the heads of the teachers unions in Broward, Miami-Dade, and Monroe counties. We invited three leading state Republican lawmakers on education for interviews. They declined the invitations.
Still to come, teachers unions, education, money, and politics.
Any attack against unions for our teachers is an attack against a 21st century economy.
I'm the only one who has stood up to demand that we make sure that new teachers earn a starting salary of $50,000 a year.
I'm looking forward to being known as the education governor.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. As always, thanks for listening and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Jessica Bakeman. We just heard from presidents of three South Florida teachers unions who are fighting for their organization's survival. The 2018 election will be high stakes for labor interests in Florida, especially the governor's race.
Yeah, so we asked the leading major party gubernatorial candidates to describe what role they believe teachers unions play in Florida's education ecosystem today and in the future.
Hello, WLRN listeners. I'm Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum.
Hi, my name is Gwen Graham.
Hi, this is Chris King, Democratic candidate for governor of Florida.
Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine, another Democrat in the race, also responded. But the Republican frontrunners declined to participate. That's Congressman Ron DeSantis and Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. We'll get back to them in a bit. But first, let's hear what the Democratic candidates have to say about unions. This is Mayor Levine.
Any attack against unions for our teachers is an attack against a 21st century economy.
Now, Levine, before he was mayor of Miami Beach, he founded a company that connects cruise ships with local vendors near ports. He argues that unions made teachers and schools better, which fuels the job market.
Because I can tell you one thing. When Jeff Bezos is out in Seattle looking at where he's going to open up his second Amazon headquarters and spend $5 billion and invest 50,000 people that are going to work there, he's looking at our education system. And when he sees our teachers are paid $9,000 to $10,000 less and our schools are not up to par, you know what he says? He says, next, show me another state.
The other businessman in the race is Chris King of Orlando. He runs an investment firm focusing on affordable housing. King also argued that good schools are necessary to improve Florida's standing.
Since the beginning of my campaign, I have talked about the role that public school teachers play in creating a Florida that is first in class. And so I see teacher unions as a critical part of an infrastructure that we need here in Florida.
So here we have, Jessica, two businessmen running for the Democratic nomination to be governor, both of them really making that linkage between the education system and the economy here in Florida.
Yeah, and you know, that's a point of view that we typically hear from Republicans. However, obviously the big difference here is that Republicans tend to see unions as forces that weaken businesses or weaken the educational system, which they often liken to a business, rather than strengthening it. So that's the difference here.
The two other Democrats in the governor's race, former Congresswoman Gwen Graham and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, they focused on what they see as a moral obligation to value teachers. They both described their perspectives on teachers and teachers' unions from their own personal experiences.
Before I ran for Congress, I was the chief negotiator for the Leon County School District and had the honor to work with three different unions in that role of negotiating contracts. I saw firsthand, you know, teachers don't work to get rich. I mean, they're there because they love the kids.
I was the first in my immediate family to graduate from high school and from college, and none of that would have been possible without caring, loving teachers who poured their energy, time, love, and so much more into me.
Gwen Graham and Andrew Gillum also both framed their points of view as antithetical to that of Republicans. Both of their statements to us included reference to, you know, attacks on unions are what we've seen for the last 20 years under Republican rule, and that will change with a Governor Graham or a Governor Gillum.
Gillum has offered some specific proposals in regards to money and education. A statewide minimum starting salary of $50,000 for teachers is what he wants. In South Florida, new teachers now make $40,000, $41,000. And here's how he says, partially how he's going to pay for it.
We believe that the richest 3% of corporations in our state should pay a little bit more in corporate income taxes so that we can invest about $1 billion into our public schools, our teachers, and into our students.
So he's pitching to raise taxes, to raise the state business corporate tax to 7.75%, up from the 7.5%, to generate what he says will be a new $1 billion in spending. And then he also published his plan to raise teacher pay online. And included in that is the idea to legalize marijuana for recreational use and then have the state tax it to raise even more money to help pay for education. He says another $1 billion in new annual revenue. So what about Gwen Graham?
Well, Gwen Graham sees schools as her defining issue.
I'm looking forward to being known as the education governor.
But as we talked about earlier in the show, I think that designation might already be taken by Jeb Bush.
Right. And also on the Republicans, House Speaker Richard Corcoran. Remember, he had flirted with the idea of running for governor for a while. Had that happened, he likely would have continued to push aggressive new school choice policies. But of course, he's not running for governor. He recently endorsed Adam Putnam. The other Republican in the governor's race, Ron DeSantis, has a more important endorsement so far, that of President Trump.
Again, both of the Republicans in the race opted not to send recordings describing their view of teachers' unions per our request. But as far as their positions on education issues, both have advocated for more career and technical education, both in K-12 schools and beyond in college.
Now, DeSantis supports arming teachers. Putnam hasn't exactly weighed in with clarity on the issue, but he has branded himself as a, quote, proud NRA sellout. That's what he tweeted last summer. Now, of course, that in the wake of the Parkland shooting has made trouble for him and Publix, the supermarket chain, which was a contributor to his campaign. Both candidates, DeSantis and Putnam, thanked teachers in social media posts during Teacher Appreciation Week earlier this month.
Something else worth mentioning here, we were talking about Corcoran and how he decided not to get into the race. There was another Republican who had declared his candidacy but is no longer running, and that is former state senator Jack Latvala. He dropped out after being accused of sexual assault and harassment by multiple women and is now reportedly under a criminal investigation. One thing to mention here, Jack Latvala was known in the legislature to be a friend of unions. He had reliably blocked some anti-union legislation. I think a lot of people thought that if he had continued to be in the legislature throughout this past session, he would have blocked House Bill 7055 or worked against it.
Well, now that we've heard from some of the gubernatorial candidates in their own voices, let's hear from classroom teachers and what they have to say about this. That's all coming up as the Sunshine Economy continues. Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Jessica Bakeman. We've been talking about the state of teachers' unions this hour, hearing about a historic strike 50 years ago, and from union leaders today. A new state law requires teachers' unions to have at least 50% of teachers pay dues or risk being decertified by the state. We asked teachers about their experiences with unions. More than 300 teachers responded. Here's just a few.
Hello, my name is Isaac Castanera. I've been a teacher for 13 years and a union member for my first 8 years.
My name is Curtis Leno. I live in Kendall.
I am the son of a Teamster.
I believe in being a member of a union.
But United Teachers of Dade is not a real union.
But I also believe UTD is inept.
My name is Seth Patterson, and I'm a proud member of United Teachers of Dade.
I am a proud,
and I'm really proud,
proud and active member of my union.
Proud to be a union activist.
My name is Shane Cook. I am a member of the Broward Teachers Union. Because of them, we have had a raise.
Good evening. My name is Dr. William Presswood.
Elizabeth Ramsey, president of United Faculty of Miami-Dade College.
And I work both in public and charter. I prefer charter for one reason only.
Corporate interests have been influencing education policy.
In public school, the union seems to protect those ineffective teachers.
Organized labor is the only meaningful counterbalance to their corporate power.
Lauren Messino.
Vanessa Skipper.
I work for Florida Virtual School.
I am an English teacher with the Brevard Public Schools. They'd love it if we'd all sit down, shut up, and stay in our classrooms.
Do I have any regrets? Absolutely not.
You can read more responses from teachers at our website, WLRN.org.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at WLRN and look for a podcast of this program and all of our programs by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Uribe is our technical director.
We had help from engagement producer Katie Lepre and producer Bridget O'Brien. Nancy Klinginer also lent a hand. I'm Jessica Bakeman.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.